This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We all love to treat ourselves every now and then, right? Like go out and buy a nice coffee, maybe get a little extra legroom on the plane. Then why are we always settling for doctors? Your health is the most important thing. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You know how I feel about making phone calls, and that is why I discovered ZocDoc many years ago before I even had a podcast. And so I'm thrilled. This feels very full circle. I use ZocDoc all the time in LA. I still use them here in Cincinnati. It's just such a cool service to be able to put in your insurance and find a doctor for whatever your ailment might be. I actually found an ENT doctor once when I had this sinus infection, probably TMI. But anyway, I love ZocDoc. I've loved it for years. And the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 to 72 hours. That's how easy it is. Sometimes they even have same day appointments. I know I've gotten some in the past. Go to ZocDoc.com/drink and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/drink. ZocDoc.com/drink.
Welcome to it. That's Why We Drink, where we do things three times, which means I have someone here who's related to Christine, who every now and then it's in the blood that you mess up and we start recording and then something went wrong horribly. So we're back at it. Can you guess who it is? It is the one and only famous Uncle Zandy in the house. Welcome. And also, did you like that intro where I kind of roasted you at the same time?
Yes, thank you. It's not like I do this for a living either. You know, that's the worst part is, you know, if it were someone else, you think, oh, okay, they're not used to podcasting. This is all I do.
I appreciate that we are two podcasters who do nothing but make oopsies all the time. So yep. I appreciate it. I just almost knocked my microphone. No, but real quick shout out. Thank you again to Eva for being here for the last couple episodes. She was a real trooper. And now I've got another person in the hot seat to take the reins and assert dominance on. Will Christine come back, or is someone just going to be so funny we have to fire her? I don't know.
Revealed my plan to everybody. What?
From your childhood bedroom, you had it planned along.
If I pan my camera up a little, you can see her name is still on the wall up there. It says
XD. Now you're going to have to do it. Oh, there it is in the corner. She's branded you for life. Wow.
Oh, no. And I couldn't get it back to where it was. So now it'll be there the whole time.
That was her plan. She had a whole baby just so your brand on your wall could show up on a show.
Oh, no.
Do you have a story for that? And also, it looks like stickers. Can you not just take it down?
I probably can. It's very high and I don't like ladders. So...
Uh-huh. That seems like a Christine was on a ladder dangerously situation.
Yeah.
So before we go any further, reminder to everybody, you're a brand new uncle, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask you for an update on the baby / Christine / your life as an uncle.
Yeah, it's obviously been wonderful, but there's not much to report other than she's really freaking cute. But yeah, very boring in a great way. Like you go over there and hang out and she's just chilling. She's just lying there. You're like, hi, you're cute. And then you give her your finger and then she like holds it. And it's amazing. It's lovely. So it feels sweet. So great. But that's it. Like for me, because I don't do anything. I don't help.
Right. Well, I wouldn't either.
I'm the uncle. I just go over there for fun whenever I want. And
that's the best part. You just get to kind of stare and then leave.
Yeah. And marvel at all the different amazing technological baby things they have.
When I was at Christine's house, she had all these little robots that are gonna do like half the job of like a mom in the 1800s, you know?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It's like they're just there now. That's crazy.
Yeah.
No, but congratulations. She is wildly cute. I was just saying this, but I was nervous. I didn't know what she'd look like just because I don't know, babies come out looking like little raisins. And I was like, hopefully she grows out of the raisin stage. She didn't even have a raisin stage. She just showed up like a cute, precious little baby. It was very weird.
It is so weird. I met her, I want to say, 2 days or 3 days after she was born. And she looked like a cute little baby. It wasn't even like a, oh, this is clearly a newborn. It was like,
she literally was smiling like 5 seconds after she was born or something. Like every picture Christine sends me, it's like she already knows how to pose. It's stupid.
It's like if you saw that baby in a TV show playing a newborn, you'd be like, okay, like they brought in an older ringer in, this great actor. But no, she's an actual newborn.
What stacked resume does this baby have 3 days in to life? Well, anyway, I do appreciate you coming on, and we really booked you for a few episodes. I was not expecting you to say yes to all those, but I very much appreciate it. So everyone buckle up for Uncle Em and Uncle Sandy taking over, and that's why we drink.
Yeah.
Do you have a reason why you drink this week?
Other than nerves for this? Not really. Okay, I have been drinking while playing RuneScape a lot. I don't know if you're familiar with RuneScape.
I don't, but my cousin is a big RuneScape fan and has told me I would really like it.
Okay, I play old school RuneScape. I don't know, you might like it.
There's new school? What's new school?
So I'm not, this should be its own episode. So there was a split, I think in 2007, when they updated RuneScape, and a lot of people got really upset because the graphics are technically much better, but it feels like a completely different game.
Right. It doesn't have the nostalgia cozy feeling.
Yeah. So some years later, they released old school RuneScape, which has the original, not the original, but the 2006, 2007 graphics. And they still add updates to it, add quests to do. So there's still a lot of content there, and I've been playing that a lot recently, and that's been my life for the past week. So
you sound like how I probably sound about Pokemon cards. Every day I learn a new thing, and I can't wait to tell Allison about it just for her to roll her eyes and walk away. But it's like I just realized yesterday that there's one pack that I thought I had finished the collection. And I found out there's a whole other secret expansion. I was like, I lost my mind. I was so frustrated because I thought I finally accomplished something. But I think you and I could probably swap trivia on those things. If there was ever a Pokemon card RuneScape trivia situation, I think we would be pretty good.
I think we'd do well. I don't know anything about Pokemon cards, so I'm glad you're there.
Got you.
Except yesterday on my TikTok For You page, I saw a video on what one of the cards in a Pokemon pack, if it's a specific green, a dark green, it means there's nothing rare in it. But if it's a like a lighter green, it means there's a holographic card in there. And I was blown away. I thought, well, that's a spoiler. That kind of stinks. What's
our algorithms are starting to snuggle, you know? No, but anyway, we really could get off on a tangent quickly.
Yeah,
your own sister, who usually co-hosts this, has already turned off the episode. So
that was the plan.
I know. Now we could say everything we want. I am shocked that you're not telling a true crime. Taking advantage of this moment and just saying all the awful things Christine could have done in her life. I mean, really rat her out. You have the full platform.
Believe it or not, I don't think she's committed any serious crimes. At least, oh, okay.
She's committed moral crimes, I'm sure. I'm certainly uncomfortable with some of her choices. Have you seen how she hangs up curtains? Anyway.
No, I don't think so. Is that a thing? Oh, God.
She's Christine. You could probably guess that it's like not right.
Did you see how she deflates an air mattress? She just lies on top of it and goes like flops on top of it over. Which is, I guess, more a universal thing than, you know, it's not just her.
That woman. Okay, never mind. Maybe that'll be next episode. Okay.
We've got some time.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. That is so nice. So I received this beautiful lilac shrub and Leona and I planted it together, and we did find a creepy like saint statue while we were digging up the yard. But that aside, it was really a wonderful experience. The funniest part is my neighbor, Anne, hi Anne, walked past me the other day and said, oh, I saw your lilac bush that you mentioned on the podcast. And I thought, wow, advertising really works, folks. I talked about that lilac shrub. She saw it in my yard. And I said, Leona and I worked very hard to plant that. And I also found a creepy saint while I dug it up. But anyway, the point being, it looks professional. It looks like a landscaper put it there, and a toddler and I actually put it there. So I feel like we've fooled everyone. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code DRINK at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code DRINK at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code DRINK. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. So you got engaged. Congrats. Now you may be wondering what's next. If you're planning a wedding, the first thing you need to know about is Zola. In fact, I actually shout this at any friends I have who are engaged because it saved my life when I was planning my wedding. Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place, including venue options and all your vendors. Plus, you can design save the dates and invites, build a free wedding website, create your registry, and stay on track and on budget throughout the entire process with their free planning tools. I tell my friends Zola is a one stop shop, right? This is the key to planning a wedding. I didn't even have a wedding planner. I used Zola and they were so helpful on every front. Everything from save the dates to a wedding website to online RSVPs to finding vendors. With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. From the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste your cake, Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually enjoyable. There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go or on your couch. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
Okay, so I have a story for you. It's actually going to be a two-parter. So Next week, everyone gets to hear how it ends. But I was just visiting you I was visiting Christine. I got to see you in your hometown. And so I thought I would do a hometown story for me. I tried to find a Cincinnati hometown story I hadn't covered yet, and I couldn't find one. So I made it about me. I'm just going to tell you my personal urban legend that I've been waiting to do actually since we started the podcast, but there was never really a lot of information. I always thought it would be kind of a dud. And when I looked it up this time, apparently a lot of updates have happened since I last checked. So we've actually got a whole two-parter versus like a paragrapher. Anyway, this is the story of the Bunny Man Bridge.
Bunny Man Bridge. Bridge is not a last name, is it? Is it an actual bridge?
Bunny Man is not a first name either.
Well, I don't know. I thought maybe it's some folk singer. Bunny Man Bridge.
Actually, that does sound like a vinyl you would buy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Bunny Man Bridge is an actual bridge that in high school, I was always so mad at my mom. She always told me if I ever went, I'd be grounded. And for some reason, I listened. I went to every other abandoned haunted property, but I listened to her on Bunny Man Bridge, but it was the legend of my town where, well, my version is very much on par with what I'm going to tell you, so I'll keep it secret for now. But Bunny Man Bridge is in Clifton, Virginia, which is maybe 45 minutes away from my town. And if people want to learn more about it, there is a short story collection called Dark Woods, Stories of Urban Legends and Folklore. There is a 2011 horror movie named Bunny Man, which apparently is a slasher film, which I'm sure is perfectly horrible. It was also discussed on Lore in season one. It was on Scariest Places on Earth, which I don't know if you remember that show, but it had the narrator was like a crazy little alien woman who's very weird.
Like actually?
Her voice was crazy. I think she's had a really thick Southern accent and a really high-pitched voice. But my whole childhood, I thought it was like a literal, like someone landed out of a UFO to narrate the show.
Okay, now I need to watch it. Just because of that fact, nothing
just
else.
Just because, I mean, just, I think it'll, I want you, if that person did audiobooks today, I would not be able to listen to them in the dark. It's still so terrifying to me. also, I'm sure she's a lovely person, but like, And then also, the Bunny Man Bridge has also been featured on the Chris Gethard Show, which I feel obligated to say because the last time I mentioned the Chris Gethard Show, I had not heard of Chris Gethard, and I called him Chris Gethard.
Gethard?
And he heard it.
No.
Apparently, or someone, one of his people reached out and was like, you need to redo whatever. But I think we did an ad, some sort of ad for his show.
Oh.
And or we were doing some sort of something, and I definitely said Chris Gethard, and no one told me to change it. So I mean,
if I have an ad, if I release an ad, and my name is even, I think, easier. I don't know. It's still hard to pronounce or just by reading it sometimes for some people, but I would provide a pronunciation key for my last name. For that one, I feel like you really should.
I feel like I certainly couldn't have been the first person to ever say that, like, especially, like, at least I said it unintentionally, but I imagine, like, seventh grade locker rooms were really horrible for him.
Oh,
and
God.
Also, like, I don't know why I was the idiot and, like, didn't try intentionally to not say Gethard. That was just what I chose to take the risky route. And then finally, Bunny Man Bridge has been featured most recently on Adult Swim during Family Guy, how they do like those little Adult Swim random commercial bumps that are like 5 seconds long. Mm-hmm. Bunny Man Bridge was featured on that.
Weird. This is I've never heard of this, but it
blew my mind. I would have never thought that Family Guy would pick that of all things, but it actually makes a lot of sense because one of the reasons I didn't cover this for a long time was because I felt like there was such scarce information. And then they picked it for a, like, 5-second commercial bump because that's all you really need to tell the whole story if you're doing a quick summary. So I'll read it really quick. What came up on the screen in between Family Guy episodes was the classic black screen with the white font. And it just said, obligatory October spooky thing. The legend of the Bunny Man in Fairfax County, Virginia. There were two separate reports of an axe-wielding man in a bunny suit yelling threats. That's the whole story. Adult Swim. So that's the so log random. Line. That's the
that's
log
so
line.
Random.
But I'm here to give you more information now.
Please. I'm hooked already.
If anyone was watching Family Guy that day and was like, I need more about that fella, you're about to get it. So the Bunny Man Bridge is actually called the Fairfax Station Bridge, or it's also called the Colchester Overpass. Again, in Clifton, Virginia, Google Maps takes the name as Colchester Overpass or Fairfax Station Bridge or the Bunny Man Bridge, fun fact. And versions of this legend vary in terms of what the Bunny Man himself looks like or who he is or what he does or who he kills or if he kills or how he kills. It seems like there's a million different versions of the legend. Sometimes he's just like a bunny and he kills people. Sometimes he kills bunnies. Sometimes he eats bunnies. Sometimes he hangs bunnies from the bridge so that you have to drive underneath the mangled bunnies. Sometimes instead of bunnies, it's teenagers. Sometimes it's teenagers and bunnies. I mean, it's a little bit everything.
Does anyone ever think he's a bunny?
No, he's always a human dressed as a bunny.
It's not like Loveland Frogman or something.
No, it's not that cool at all. Which, by the way, Loveland Frogman was going to be the thing I covered for you. But then I think we already covered it, and I was like,
that's the only cryptid I know locally, yeah.
Oh, excuse me, you're related to America's Hercene Shifter.
Hercene Shifter.
Wow, you're really trying to keep that one under wraps. I understand the shame. That's okay. I'd be embarrassed, too.
I'm related to it. It makes me uncomfortable.
Honestly, I would hate to be the sorry fool who has to share blood with the Shifter. So, okay, so... yes, it's never expected to be like a man-sized bunny or a bunny-sized man, but it is always a man dressed as a bunny.
A bunny-sized man.
That would be one for the books, I think.
I'd like that one the best.
I would also enjoy him. I hope there's little versions of that one day. So anyway, whatever the version people have heard, it always boils down to the same basic points. And the main story is that somewhere in the very early 1900s, the number I usually hear or the year I usually hear is 1904. But when I was in high school, we just said like, oh, a long time ago. But anytime you ask for a specific year, people have said 1904. There was a mental hospital's bus that was transferring patients from their hospital to the Lorton Prison. And this was from the Fairfax, I don't know, asylum. I don't know what word they would use back then. So they're transferring the patients over to Lorton Prison. The bus crashes, it topples over, and the doors fly open, and all of the patients scatter. And the hospital staff try to gather everybody, but one escapes. And it's, depending on the story or version you've heard, sometimes it's one, sometimes it's two. This patient's name was Douglas J. Griffin. And if you are a believer in the second, the two patients escaped version, then it's Douglas J. Griffin and Marcus Walster. So I always heard the story of just Douglas escaping. I never knew about Marcus until I did these notes.
And in the second person, is that like an accomplice? Do people believe it's like an accomplice, or
he ends up being the first victim?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm just like, ooh.
Yeah. Also, like, let's take a moment for me to say, like, I'm very aware of like how this is like clearly a very old legend and not painting people in mental hospitals as, you know, anything other than villains. Like, let's just address that now. But anyway, get ready for a really horrible trope about people checking into mental hospitals. So it was Douglas and Marcus. So Douglas apparently can't let anyone find, well, apparently, he can't let anyone find him because he would obviously get sent back to the hospital. So he lives out his days in the woods. And I guess he picked an area that was very rabbit heavy in terms of the wilderness. And so he lived off the rabbits. And during the winters, to stay warm, he would not only eat them, but he would use their fur to stay warm. Which is, by the way, how he becomes, he's in a bunny suit by Christmas, I guess, or something.
So it's a suit made of bunnies, not, because when I first heard it, I thought he went to
like
the party store or whatever and got a big costume and was just a walking bunny. Donnie Darko thing.
When I first heard it, I thought it was like an Easter bunny gone mad or something. I was really confused. But no, apparently it's just a bunch of multi-bunnied coat, if you will. It's like the Ed Gein or Leatherface, but instead of doing it with human bodies, it's bunny bodies. Also, I just remembered you're a very staunch vegan. Wow, sorry about this. Okay, so are you having fun?
I mean, you're not doing the skinning like in front of me. Like this is a so
he is doing it privately. He respects others' practices.
Oh, so. That's what it is. Okay. Cool.
So he dresses like a bunny, and sometimes he's killing the bunnies for food. And the part that I guess makes no sense to me, but I guess we get away with the trope of like, oh, he was mentally ill, so we don't need to have a reason for this. He would eat the bunnies and then he would hang their bodies on the bridge. My thought process, because I'm desperately trying to like do mental gymnastics to like figure out why that would have happened at all, is like maybe they dry out in the sun so he can get their fur faster. I don't know. But he hangs them over the bridge. So that way anyone going through the bridge has to drive under this little curtain of dead bunnies.
Oh, dear God, an image.
Are you having fun, Sandy? This isn't even your last episode. I'm sorry.
This is part one of the bunny hanging curtain. Great. I wonder how my sister would hang curtains, because apparently she isn't too good at that.
I didn't even put that together in my head. Okay, she hangs curtains better than the bunny man. That's like a good place to start.
Really good, phew.
Okay, so again, sometimes he kills teenagers and also hangs them on the bridge. And there's another version where he only shows up on Halloween. So like you're safe any other day of the year. And I don't know about the bunnies. Are they safe every other day? I don't know. I don't know.
He like just a year kills a year's supply of bunnies on Halloween. Just a massacre.
Yeah. What if maybe that's the day where like bunnies get a break, or maybe it's the day where humans get a break. And that's just like a bunny festival. So, anyway, that's where we are. I feel like I keep mentioning that he's hanging things on bridges, so let's just quickly go past that. So there's a whole bunch of versions, but the way that it basically ends is that either the cops gave up after a while of looking for him because he was a runaway, or they gave up. They just assumed he died out in the woods, so they never looked for him again, and it became like a cold case. But the other version, which I hadn't heard, was that the bunny man actually did almost get caught by the police eventually, but as they were about to catch him, they were all cornering around him or circling around him, bam, hit by a train. They just what? Apparently were cornering him on a train track.
Don't do that on the track. I was hoping you'd say, like, the bunnies for some reason took his side and attacked. Like, even though he's been killing them all these years or whatever. And
they just... finally came to an agreement. They for that day only, they had a stalemate.
It was like Stockholm Syndrome or something. I don't know.
They just felt bad for him. He's clearly had a checkered past. Anyway, so that story goes that I guess he got hit by a bus, and now his ghost is what haunts the woods, which I guess as time goes by, it makes sense why he has not aged. But I guess we all, you know, that serves that explanation. There's usually someone around when they're telling you this legend to be like, oh, and by the way, if you don't believe me, like, there's proof of it at the old Clifton Library. And I say that because there's a lot of holes in this story. One is that the old Clifton Library does not exist.
That's a pretty big hole.
it's clearly like someone just repeating what they've heard, and it's like, oh, that's a big old gotcha. Also, so Fairfax County never had a mental hospital to transfer people over to Lorton Prison. And also that couldn't have happened because Lorton Prison wouldn't exist for like another 15 years or something. Plus it wasn't even in like Virginia's jurisdiction. It was like part of BC. So that would have made no sense. Also, there's no county records of either patient that escaped, Douglas or Marcus. Also 1904, I feel like buses, like that was an early bus. I feel like the bus didn't have to crash for the doors to just open, you know? I feel like they were made of wood or something, you know? So anyway, all that to say, there's some pretty big holes that we're just completely disregarding. But there's one guy out there named Brian Conley, and he was the person who, like, cracked the case that, like, finally gave me a reason to be able to even cover this as a topic. Because before that, that was the whole story. That was just what we knew. But Brian Conley, he works at the Fairfax Public Library, and I guess a bunch of people kept coming in asking about the bunny man, and at some point he just snapped, and he was like, I don't know. No one knows. I don't know. It's a legend.
Oh, I thought he snapped and became the bunny man, and it came full circle. Okay.
They're passing the torch. He's finally, they needed a new source. So he decided that he was going to figure it out once and for all for everybody, what is going on, who the bunny man is. Even if it exists, or at least where the urban legend comes from. So he actually wrote a paper called The Bunny Man Unmasked, The Real Life Origins of an Urban Legend. And I guess this is like the smoking gun of like at least telling us where the inspiration for the story came from. So I guess when he did enough digging, he realized that there was really no mention of the lore of Bunny Man Bridge or even like a fake story about someone at an asylum or being, you know, this car crash that everyone escaped. He was like, there should definitely be newspapers about that. So he didn't find anything until the 1970s about a man in a bunny suit. And this is allegedly a story from 1904. So there's like 60 years where no one's talking about it. So there's a pretty good chance that the origins of this started in the 70s. Especially because he found two back-to-back incidents in the same area that had to do with a man in a bunny suit. So it was mid-October 1970, and one guy named Robert Bennett and his fiance were on the way back home from a football game, and they were on the 5400 block of Guinea Road. And I say that because they were on the 5400 block, and the second incident was on the 5300 block. So it was literally one block away from each other that these things happened. So they were on their way home from a football game, and they stopped by their uncle's, and they decided to park across the street from him in a field. I am going to go on record and say I don't think they were going to go see their uncle because it was midnight and they parked in a field. Mm. So I think that was just a real nice cover when the cops wanted a, like, a witness a report or something. But so, yeah, they were in the fields hanging out in the car. And shortly after, one of the windows is smashed in. And they look to see what happened. And there's a guy standing outside of their car in a white outfit. They're freaked out, but in terms of fight or flight, thank God he did not freeze. And Robert was able to drive them out of there. But as they were driving away, they saw what smashed the window in, and there was a hatchet on the floor of their car. Which, like, if I were the bunny man, I'd be pissed that I lost a good hatchet.
Yeah, that sucks.
That's like $30 at Home Depot.
Yeah, and then how do you kill all your bunnies?
You got to go make hands? Another hatchet with what? Don't you need a hatchet to make a hatchet or something? Whoa. I feel like, hang on, how did he get the first hatchet?
Oh, no.
Was this the first hatchet? Was it like the 30th one he stored in a car? Maybe he was just trying to, like, do some axe throwing before it was cool.
Oh, that is
so it. He drives off. They see this hatchet in their car, and they hear him screaming, you're on private property. I have your tag number, which I was expecting something more festive and bunny themed, but
yeah. Happy Easter.
I have some carrots. Like, I don't know what I was expecting, but my whole life, because I really did grow up with the story since I was at least 15. And I always thought, like, I never knew the bunny man could speak, first of all. But now I'm finally at almost 30 realizing he can speak. And those are the first fucking words I hear.
Oh, that's, like, disappointing. Yeah.
It was really anticlimactic. So it's just a guy dressed in white saying you're on private property. A very unhinged guy. But
but not unhinged enough. Like, still needs some
he's like bunny not, themes. He's not rabbit looking enough for me. So when asked for a description by the police, Robert said that the guy was in a white suit and he had bunny ears on his head, which I guess he still swears by, but his fiance was like, ixnay on the bunny ears. They were not there, but he was wearing a white caperote, which apparently is like one of those very tall cone-shaped, like religious hoods.
Oh, dear, like KKK?
So no one said that in the notes, but I certainly thought the same thing, because I'll send you a picture in the chat of what these look like. And I mean, you tell me what that looks like, especially the white one right in the middle.
Let's see. Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, that like a Spanish thing?
It's apparently a Spanish. It's for people who are like repenting. It's like for, like, I think some ceremony where you're like actually intentionally repenting in a way where you hide your face from everybody so that way everyone's focused on God or something. But it sure as heck looks like something else.
And in Virginia, why would...
And in Virginia in the 70s in a very rural town.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to say that, like, all of a certain group are the KKK. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying I imagine people who just throw axes into people's windows because they're on your property are equally as, disturbing to hang out with. Or maybe not equally, but still, I don't want to hang out with either of them, you know?
And this is such a niche item. If you have one of these and you're in Virginia in the state, like, someone wore that in Ohio, in the 21st century, I'd be like,
if someone wore that today, I would be like, do you know what's happening? Because I feel like we're in different worlds right now. Like,
you can't even get one on Amazon. Like, so how did this guy in Virginia get one of these things?
And also, I mean, it really, at the time, it was definitely in the sticks. So
weird.
No one said that in the notes. I'm so glad you offered that information or offered that thought up, because I certainly was thinking it the whole time. It's just interesting. Mm-hmm. And also, I would be so fucking upset if all I ever wanted to do was go to the Bunny Man Bridge just for the Bunny Man to, like, be a white supremacist. I, like, can't take it. I can't do it, Zandy.
The only thing worse than just being boring is being a white supremacist.
I mean, in terms of, like, Beach Too Sandy, like, if I'm rating my hometown legend now, like, it's certainly not a 5 like I thought it was. Anyway, he's wearing I kind of now really hope that Robert's right and he was wearing bunny ears, but it would make sense because he thought they were long bunny ears, but it could have been like that hood flopped over or something. And he said he was in all white. It honestly, I was so excited to do these notes. And then when I read that sentence and I looked at the picture, I went, oh, fuck. I was like, that's not the direction I was hoping this would go. I wanted to find out he was a literal animated bunny. Yeah. That was all I wanted. So the cops never found out who it was, as far as we know, but they did. This is a fun fact out of all of it, because they never found out who the person was. They just gave them the hatchet. They were like, oh, you can have this. So they actually kept the hatchet, fun fact, and they have it like on a mount. Like, they're like, this is the hatchet that got thrown at us. And that was the very first incident of someone in a bunny, maybe, suit, or a very racist suit. One of the two. And a week and a half later, there's now a second incident where this guy named Paul Phillips, he was patrolling a building that was under construction. So he was part of the security team. And he saw a man in a bunny costume with a hatchet walk onto the property. And he apparently, this guy was about 20 years old. Paul said that this guy looked like he was 5'8", and he had a hatchet. And as soon as Paul tried to tell him to leave, he started chopping at part of the porch with the hatchet.
Oh, no.
Which I like that he now he has a second axe, at least. Yeah. We figured out that mystery. And again, as soon as he says, like, you need to get off the property, this bunny guy, he starts chopping at the porch and screaming, you are trespassing. If you come any closer to me, I'll chop off your head.
Oh, God.
Which, like, a quick decline from even just throwing a hatchet and saying, I have your tag number. Now it's, I'll behead you.
Yeah, and, like, walking up to their house and doing this.
Especially when, like, you're also trespassing to even be here to tell the patrolman that he's trespassing. So this is where I started to think, okay, this guy, ironic that the storyline goes that someone that was part of like a mental institution ended up breaking away when, like, I don't even know if they knew, they, like, that was a story that they made up before we even had this information. And it seems like this person is not mentally well. I mean, literally throwing axes at people. Like, I mean, something's not unpacked there. But it's just a weird, like, foreshadowing, but also hindsight kind of situation.
Yeah. Like, yeah, because this was found, like, out so much later, but about the past, like so long in the past.
What are the odds that the story was, like, not right, but it had, like, a thing to it that was, not totally wrong? So anyway, he's just watching this guy chop on a porch, which, by the way, not only is he trespassing, but he's now vandalizing other people's property. And Paul, as a security guy, went to go grab his gun, but as soon as he went for it, the bunny man ran off. Both cases led to nothing. There was no solid evidence, but the story obviously spread like wildfire because there's two people saying that a guy in a bunny outfit and a hatchet are running around chopping on things. Everyone wanted in on the story, and the cops ended up getting bombarded with calls about bunny man sightings, not knowing if they're true. Maybe people just wanted to be involved. Newspapers were starting to cover it nonstop. And here were some of the first articles that came out about the bunny men. They were titled, Man in Bunny Suit Sought in Fairfax. The Rabbit Reappears. Bunny Man Seen. Bunny reports are multiplying. So it's just, I appreciate the attempt on the pun
that
there. And Robert and his fiance, the people who had the first incident, there was never an official record of it happening, but to this day, they still say it's true. I guess the guy from the library who was fed up with not knowing the information literally tracked them down and was like, can you confirm that you're actually, like, your part of the story is valid?
That's wild. Imagine not talking about that for probably years if no one knows it really
they
happened.
Didn't talk about this... it for years. He said that they still seemed really bothered by it.
Yeah.
But then again, it's like, I wonder, I mean, I totally get if, like, the situation genuinely happened and they were bothered by it, but I also wonder, like, maybe people found out they were part of the story and they just got bombarded their whole life and it's the last thing they want to talk about now. But for the second incident, though, there actually was a report on file of vandalism, which, good. And I guess when this guy was going around trying to get as much information as he could about the bunny man, ended up getting a hold of a redacted copy of the vandalism report. which does confirm the general storyline of, quote, a subject dressed as a rabbit with an
axe.
So we at least know in the 70s, a rabbit with an axe is going around. And the case, after that vandalism incident, the case ended up getting handed off to a detective named Detective Johnson. And when he was going around the area and interviewing people, seeing if they had any insight or if they'd seen anything, he ended up at this construction company, and they said that they saw nothing. But as soon as the detective left, they called him back and they said, you're not going to believe this, but the Axeman just called us. And which freaks me out too, because like back then they didn't have caller ID or anything, or they didn't have for all we know, unless they checked the phone records, which I don't know about, this guy could have totally been making it up and just wanted to be part of it. And so he just decided, oh, when he leaves, I'll just pretend the guy called me. But anyway, he allegedly called this construction worker immediately after a detective was there questioning about it. And the Axeman said, quote, "Mister, you have been messing up my property by dumping tree stumps, limbs and brush, and other things on the property, and you can make everything right by meeting me tonight and talking about the situation." Okay. Oh. Very convenient that people are looking for you and now you want to meet up. So the cops arranged a sting operation, but the guy never showed. So that makes me feel like this phone call, it was very convenient that all of a sudden he had information right when the guy left.
But it's so funny how boring the problem here is. You've been dumping some stumps around, so...
it does seem like it was the original guy if he's still complaining about people's properties.
Yeah. That at least lines up. And weirdly, I wouldn't be surprised if that's actually just the issue. It's like, hey, get off. I feel like I have the rights to this place, so I'm going to dress up as a bunny and...
Also, in a small town... anything is news. So your big issue that week is that someone put their trees on your lawn, everyone's going to hear about it. My dad just texted me 2 days ago, and his best friend, who I don't even think he talks to all that much anymore, one of his longest friends, but they don't really talk. They just kind of know that they're, they miss each other and they'll call if there's an emergency. Mm-hmm. Apparently his son was given the title Homecoming King. And my dad, who lives in a very small town, when I used to live there was 400 people in that town, and they know everybody, blah, blah, blah. He texted me a picture of this random kid I've never met as Homecoming King, and he texted me with, "You got a call soon, so much to talk about." And I was like, no, there's nothing to talk about. I couldn't care less about this.
You've missed so much.
I'm not even going to be able to remember all the details if you don't call me right now. So all I'm saying is, if this guy was so peeved about his trees or trees on his property, if my dad is texting me that kind of bullshit, this guy is for sure someone that kind of bullshit. Anyway, also fun fact, he calls himself the Axeman, not the Bunny Man, which is interesting.
Oh, I wonder if he's insulted by the Bunny Man. I mean, it does make him seem kind of fluffy and fun.
It's not even Rabbit Man. It's little baby bitch rabbit.
I've got an axe. Don't you see that? Come on, I can kill you.
He's really trying to butch it up, and he's still Bunny Man, So anyway, the cops arranged a sting operation. He never shows. It could have been a prank call. But if it was him, the voice at this point the voice apparently sounded very much like a late teens or an early 20s, which corroborates with the other incident where the guy was he was in his 20s.
Okay. Yeah. Weird. Because, when I first hear about Bunny Man, I think I don't know, 50s, 60s, really gruff kind of person. I don't know. This is weird. Interesting.
Yeah, so he's apparently could just be a guy trying to make a name for himself, or maybe he's just bored as hell in this town where someone's homecoming king and I got to hear about it from across the country. So, so in his 20s, and plus, not only are the cops trying to find leads for who the Bunny Man is, but now, because it's such a small town, it's getting spread like crazy. And there's parents that are worried, sending their kids home, or this was the era where kids would just walk home and no one paid attention to that. And now they're someone with a fucking axe is in our woods. So there were a lot of kids hearing about it at school, and everyone wanted to one-up each other, I'm sure. And so all of them started telling their parents that they knew the Bunny Man, or they were going to go see the Bunny Man. And so now the cops are also dealing with, like, all these false reports, because all these kids say, oh, I know the Bunny Man. And I guess it leaked that he was in his 20s, so maybe it could have been someone's older brother. And then so it just became the talk of the town.
Yeah. When I'm thinking back to my time in middle school, I'm sure there are plenty of my friends' older siblings that I would think would be the Bunny Man.
I already know in my childhood who the Bunny Man would have been if I knew them.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
That was like, and also I hope that person knows that's what I think of them, you know?
Yes, that's true too.
Anyway, that is the first half of the Bunny Man Bridge, and we'll find out more next week.
Lovely. Oh my gosh, that's exciting. I'm excited for part two now.
I am so stoked that I finally get to, I've been wanting to talk about this one for so long, and I just kept putting it off. And when I ended up seeing how much information there was at all of a sudden, I was like, oh, I finally get to do this. And also, I feel like you were a prime candidate to hear the story, not because you're a vegan and it's about dead bunnies, but I feel like it's silly enough. I feel like, you know, it's a good gabber, you know?
Yeah, it was a very good gabber. And then I have a really, I don't know, nothing like good comes out of these true crime ones. I don't know what the hell I'm doing here.
It's, yeah, well.
But I guess it puts pressure on you. That puts pressure, I feel like that puts pressure on you to like
force in some gab. Thank you. Someone else is finally saying it. Yeah, well, I have to have a je ne sais quoi when it comes to somehow making true crime that are real people's lives. The trick is you got to find the jokes that have nothing to do with the story. You got to find, like when Christine says September instead of September, I'm going to ride that wave for as long as I can, because it has nothing to do with like someone's like horrific story. And I don't want to, you know, fuck that up at all. So as long as you maybe mess up a word,
I was going to say, like, I'll probably mispronounce some things. Perfect.
If thinking about salsa in a variety of delicious flavors and heat levels makes your mouth water, you need to check out Green Mountain Gringo. And make sure to turn the jar around and take a look at its clean backside, a list of its all-natural ingredients. Of course, that's what I meant, of course. And all their products are preservative-free, too. With the medium salsa, you get hearty chunks of tomatoes, tomatillos, peppers, and onions in every scoop. I'm reading the ad and my mouth is watering. Anyway, the hot salsa brings flavorful heat to every meal with each bite containing jalapenos, serrano peppers, and other savory herbs. Plus, they've got a hot sauce with a tangy, spicy flavor that enhances the simplest of meals. It's perfect for avocado egg toast or tacos. I sort of feel like they're reading my mind because I put salsa on almost everything, but specifically, I use their salsa. I use usually the medium salsa and then also the hot sauce on my avocado egg toast. And I don't know how the script knew that. Maybe everybody eats this, but I always make toast with avocado and then I put scrambled eggs on top and I put salsa. I can't eat it without salsa. And the Green Mountain Gringo is always there for me in the fridge because it really adds to, I mean, any meal if you're me, but definitely the eggs avocado toast situation. Visit greenmountaingringo.com and start shopping. Use the store locator to find Green Mountain Gringo products, get inspiration for recipes, and purchase products using promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off. That's promo code PODCAST24. And don't forget to check out their backside.
And That's Why We Drink is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With Squarespace, it's easy to create a beautiful website all on your terms. You won't want to miss Fluid Engine. This is a next-generation website design system from Squarespace with reimagined drag-and-drop technology for desktop or mobile. And I'll be honest, this is a game changer. Back when I made the And That's Why We Drink website, I used Squarespace. This was obviously well before they were a sponsor, and we have used them ever since. And it's unbelievable how easy this tool is. If any of us, that's the coolest part, any of us on the team can log in and move some things around, update things. We don't need like a dedicated webmaster to figure it out for us because it's so accessible. I love Squarespace. I've made many websites with it before, and it's really easy to get started. You can get one of their Squarespace professional website templates to use. They have designs for every category and use case. Then you can customize your look, update content, add features to fit your unique needs. It's just a really, really cool service. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/drink to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Well, it's funny because I was going to start by mentioning that this is something that happened in Germany.
Oh, perfect.
And my sister probably always tries to pronounce things very German.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will when we coerce her enough, yes.
Yeah, well, I will go in and out. It's funny. There's certain things that I'm going to be American about, but then the other ones I'm like, I don't even know how I would say that in as an American. So I'm just going to say the more German.
And I've never heard you speak German. I've heard Christine do it, but not you.
I don't know if I'll actually do it. It'll just be like towns and things. Like his name, this person, by the way, okay, dun dun dun, is Jürgen Bartsch, which is not how you say it in German, but I'm going to say it that way because I don't want to have to, you know. So Jürgen Bartsch, and I found him because I lived in Essen, Germany, which is a town, it's like an industrial area of Germany. It's like western in the west, somewhat close to the Netherlands. And I Googled serial killer Essen, Germany, because I thought, oh, I want something.
Your hometown.
Pertaining to me. It is where my dad was born and my grandpa on my mom's side was born.
Oh,
so there's
fine.
A lot of family history there. So I found him. And my mom knows about him. My dad knows about him because the murders that he committed took place in the 60s. So it was between 1962 and 1966. And it was one of the more, the first high-profile cases because of the media involvement in Germany. Well, specifically West Germany here, but East Germans were also, like, obviously invested in this. Yeah, so here we go.
The story of Jürgen Bartsch. Do we find out at the end that, like, you're accidentally related to him or something?
Shoot, I didn't think about that. I don't think so. No.
When your parents are Bernie and Renata, anything's possible. I just Weirdly, always get nervous, and then you're bringing it to their hometown.
Oh, no. Oh, no, you're right. You're right. My dad does say things like, oh, yeah, you're related to this this distant bastard son of this prince in Spain. I'm like, okay, Dad.
I saw your dad for like 30 seconds when I was in town, and the things that came out of his mouth just blew me away. I was like, it's too early in the day. I was like, you gotta go.
I talked to him about this yesterday. I brought it up again. I said, oh, you know how I'm doing that one case? And I forgot Jürgen's name because I was just blanking. And he started singing a song. And I was like, that's not the name of the guy I'm doing. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's just another serial killer that I know about. And they had a song.
Okay, but is that not Christine in like 30 years? That's like,
yeah. Exactly. I get it now. I sat there I thought,
too.
I get it. Yeah.
You know, now that she's a parent, it's going to be a lot easier to compare them. Just saying.
That's so true. Oh, God.
Sorry, Christine. Sorry. I didn't mean it. I just meant it. Okay, take it away.
Okay, so first I'm going to give a little bit of background on him and the murders, but then get into some other meaty things that I about the case that I really enjoyed. Is that the right word? Enjoyed researching.
You
the
did.
Research was fun, but it was not fun at the same time. So yeah, he was a West German serial killer. He was born Karl Heinz Sadrazinski, November 6th, 1946, in Essen, Germany. His mother was sick in the hospital after giving birth and died 5 months later.
Jeez.
She had tuberculosis. Yeah, so he spent his first 11 months of his life in the hospital without a mother. There was no mention of a father. So then a family, a butcher and his wife, adopted him and renamed him Jürgen Bartsch and brought him to their town of Langenberg.
Wow. Wait, like lingonberries?
Not quite.
I'm not trying to be funny. That sounds like that would be where lingonberries come from.
I think those are like a Swedish thing, lingonberry. But yeah, I don't know if it's famous. I think now it's not even a town. I think it's technically just a region that has the name Langenberg, or it combined with another town. But so I don't think there's anything too interesting.
I appreciate your really solid answer there, though. That was not what I was expecting. Okay.
Well, that's maybe the last time I give a solid answer to anything, but we'll see. So growing up, his parents were very strict and also abusive. One of his friends described them as, quote, completely overprotective and emotionally withdrawn. His mother sexually abused him, as did his cousin.
Oh, shit.
His mom bathed him until he was 15. While he was in school, the parents thought that the school wasn't strict enough, so they sent him to a Catholic boarding school. And while he was there, he was sexually abused by a priest.
God. Oh my God.
Yeah. So, and then meanwhile, his dad, his main focus was his work and his butcher shop. So, and there was a time later during the trial where the dad said that he couldn't testify as a witness because he was too busy with the shop and didn't want to close it for a day. So even after his son is on trial and he would have been a witness on this trial, he was like, oh, sorry, I've got work.
And then this is, and like, I don't mean it. I don't mean it. It's more European though to not be super emotional, right? But that's still, I don't know anything about that world. That's still like super fucked up even there, right?
Yeah, I'd say. Oh yeah, definitely. It was and a lot of that I know that is because, you know, there's a lot of media around this case and a lot of people were very upset with how the parents raised raised him. So there was a lot of outcry about that. But so Jürgen also worked in the butcher shop and hated it. But he said the reason why was because he didn't really know what else to do with his life. He was like, this is a family butcher shop, making some money. And
Butcher's world, I'm just living in it.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think there's too much else to do in Langenberg. So, but he said that the actual slaughtering of the animals he didn't like, so he worked the register, which meant he could steal money very easily from said register. And he used that money for things like taxis to get around to find his victims.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I thought you were trying to make the word taxes sound cute. Oh. Little taxis.
He paid his little taxis,
and I was like, "Good for him! Good for him!" I'm so sorry.
His victims were all tax collectors. So
taxi collectors,
little taxi collectors. Well, speaking of which, okay, so the murders now. At the age of 15, he was 15 when he committed his first murder, and it was an 8-year-old, Klaus Jung. Yeah. And then his second victim was 13, Peter Fuchs, and then a 12-year-old Ulrich Kahlweiss. And then finally, when he was 19, he committed his final murder, which was killing 12-year-old Manfred Grossmann.
So he was, so in those 4 years, he killed 4 minors?
Yes. So he was a minor himself when he started the murders at 15. Right.
Whoa.
But he killed an 8-year-old boy, then a 13-year-old boy, a 12-year-old boy, and then another 12-year-old boy after that.
Holy crap. And that's it's interesting because I remember you saying that the slaughtering animals did not appeal to him.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what he talked about. And then yet here he is. And they were brutal too. So he first found the victims either within his town or he'd go to these parish festivals. So another name for him is actually the carnival killer, because he'd go to these parish festivals and give tickets to the boys to kind of win over their favor.
Ooh, gross.
And then he'd tell them that he was a detective and or that he worked for an insurance company, because he said there was a suitcase that was full of diamonds in a tunnel and he needed a witness to be there and that he would pay them. So he would then invite them to a pub, like I think on the outskirts of town, give them some apple juice, buy them an apple juice, which very German thing.
I was going to say, through all of this, like the kid can't have a beer before he's about to like go down to a tunnel with you. Okay, whatever. I'm glad he has his values.
Yeah, right.
Whatever.
And then he'd give them 50 Deutschmark to come with him to the tunnel. And it was also within the tunnel. It was very confusing because I had used multiple sources. But within there, I think, was an unused air raid shelter, which is where he'd actually commit the murders. So this was a few miles outside of town. It was near a cloister. And once he lured the boys there, he would beat them up, tie them up. Then he would sexually abuse them. He sexually abused all of his victims. Then he'd torture them to death, dismember them, and then bury them in the tunnel.
Oh my God. Holy.
So it was a very control thing. He would always, and he stated that he wanted to torture, his goal was to torture them to death. He wanted them to suffer until they died.
Also, I imagine if he was already doing that on the first try, like, he had been thinking about this for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it wasn't a let's see what happens situation.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. And he was, it was just, yeah, it's awful. And then there was an intended fifth victim, Peter Fries, who barely escaped. He was tied up in the air raid shelter, and Bartsch, every night at 7 p.m., would go to watch TV with his parents.
I'm so sorry. Like, right, because he's a child. I forgot.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was part of the thing. He'd go home, watch TV with the parents, and then come back. So 7 p.m. hit, so he had to go. But Peter said, hey, I'm, like, really scared of the dark. Please don't leave me here. It's too dark. So he left two candles behind. And so Peter went up to the first candle with his ropes. He was tied up with ropes
to
burn the candle, but the candle went out. So thankfully, though, he was able to burn his ropes with the second candle and escape. Oof. And that's how he ended up getting caught, was Peter went and told the authorities.
Wow.
And Bartsch confessed to everything. Yeah, so that's like the murders. There are a lot of details that I left out because I'm like, I'm reading these. It's just brutal, some of this stuff. And I felt weird because I didn't want to downplay what happened to these victims, but at the same time, I'm like, this is too much. I felt sick reading it.
It's a fine line. It's like a shitty fine line. Like, there shouldn't even be the fine line of, like, mm-hmm. like, it's also, it's their story, so you want to honor it, but also, like, it's rough. Yeah,
yeah,
I get it. Especially if it's super brutal. It's like, are you telling it because it's entertainment or because it's, like, valuable to the story?
Yeah. And oof. I think what a lot of the value to the story comes after the fact, because, and that's what I'm going to go into now, because this was, like I said, a very high profile case, and it had a huge impact on the German justice system.
Really?
Yeah, because at his first trial, so there were multiple trials. The first trial, he was tried as an adult. This was, at this point, December of 1967. He was found guilty and was sentenced to life in prison because there was no death penalty. So that wasn't an option. But he was sentenced to life in prison. I think it was five, actually, consecutive life in prison terms. However, the sentence ended up being appealed because his lawyers argued that he was a minor, and
they couldn't do that.
Well, it was because not just that he was a minor, but that wasn't really an aspect of the first trial. They didn't consider his age, and they didn't consider his psychological. They didn't do any sort of psychological evaluation. They specifically complained about the experts, that there were no expert witnesses to testify about his psychological state. So they felt, and at the time, during all this, there was so much media around this case. So they said that had also a major impact because it was a very quick first trial. And sure enough, a federal court of justice in West Germany ruled that the original court hadn't gotten the proper experts to make the most informed decision. So then 4 years later, he was tried a second time. That was 1971. But between 1967 and 1971, the courts, the police, Bartsch himself, and then in his lawyers, and the lawyers on the prosecution, received hundreds of letters from all Germans, and they gave quite a few different opinions. And there was this whole research article detailing these letters. They had some excerpts from these letters, and it was fascinating to read what these people at the time thought about the case, because these were all also published in the newspaper. So you could just go read the newspaper and see, oh, this person in Munich thinks that Bartsch should be hanged in the streets.
It was like the original Reddit. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It was like all it's like all
a
these
forum, just a random forum of people.
You can just say what you want, basically. so I'm going to go into some of the examples of these letters. So first, on the subject of expert witnesses, here's a direct quote. Someone said, "What will the expert witnesses who want to examine the brain, his brain, and his cock cost?" So the main.
I'm sorry, his penis?
Yeah, yeah, because it was because of the sexual nature of the crime too. There were a lot of people worried about that.
Just picking that out of nowhere. Okay, got it.
Yeah, so they wanted these. They were wondering though what they would cost and how much the taxpayers would have to pay.
Mm.
And there was a women's association that said, "Quote: He is a murderer and remains a murderer despite expert witnesses who just want to make money."
Oh.
So people didn't want them to go too in depth and just kind of toss him away and say, hey, like, they were just like, look, he's a murderer. Just treat him as such.
Right.
And speaking of which, a lot of times people would write in about the Nazi Party because...
would they? Why?
Yes. So this was the late 60s, early 70s. And people would link it to Adolf Hitler and say, hey, if Hitler were here, we wouldn't be going through all this. He'd be dealt with really swiftly. So people were praising how Hitler would treat this case. And people also would point to Nazi laws for like sterilization. They would say that he deserves to go into a concentration camp.
Whoa.
Kill him by firing squad.
Oof.
Yeah, and that was actually 5% of the letters that were written in mentioned Nazis. So
fascinating.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Horrible, but really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And there was a soldier who wrote in saying, I was a soldier for 8 years and in 4 areas of war, but I never saw such a sadistic child murderer. Which for this research paper I read, they basically said, yeah, they're downplaying what the Nazis did. If this is the worst that they've seen because of how the atrocities that the Nazis committed.
Good point.
So
great point.
A lot of people were trying to bring up the Nazis, but weirdly in a way against, against the murderer and like pro Nazi. It's bizarre.
Huh.
But that speaks to the politics at the time. West and East Germany was very, not that I know too much about it. I've taken some courses, but yeah, it's politically, it was a very weird time for Germany. But yeah, so then, like I said, people wrote in saying, oh, just hang him, even though that wasn't even an option because there's no death penalty. And then so instead of since there's no death penalty, people would write in and say, actually, release him to us. We will deal with him. We will
handle
it.
Oh, my God.
The public will give him what's coming to him.
Wow. So this is like just the most polarizing. Like this is like everyone is in a position.
Yeah.
Is of opinion.
Yeah, they all think that they know what's best most of the time. And one thing that he said was that he was a magician by that was one of his hobbies was magic. And he was actually a member of a magician's guild or something, and they had to revoke his status because of the press. They didn't want him to be a part of their organization, which fair enough. I don't blame them. And
I mean Oh, I was going to say, nothing, continue. I was just going to go off on a tangent as I usually do, and you said magic, and my brain magically forgot that we were doing a podcast. So anyway, keep going.
Well, because of the reports of the magic, a lot of Christians would write in because they think magic, they think the supernatural. Uh-huh. So
didn't even think about that.
They talked about that this was the work of supernatural demonic forces.
Right, like it's obvious that this is satanic behavior.
Exactly. They said there must have been hypnosis involved. They talked about superstitions. And then, like you said, some people thought that it was a battle that he was waging between God and the devil. And so then they'd write in and say, oh, well, I'll help you. I'm a Christian. I can help you find salvation, basically. But the Catholic thing gets even worse because, and I didn't find this out until I was reading about these letters, it turns out that Bartsch confessed his first murder to a priest.
Oh, like the 8-year-old.
So he killed this 8-year-old and then told a Catholic priest and said, hey, I did this. And the priest said, go tell the police. But of course, the priest did not tell the police himself because... That, according to the Catholic Church, would be grounds for excommunication. You are not
what
allowed
to... What a silly little thing that is, huh?
Isn't that... It's awful. So, there were a mix of letters about that. A lot of them. Because once that was reported, a lot of people were rightfully very upset, saying that the priest should be charged for this. Because if he had told the police, it could have saved 3 boys' lives.
And it almost could... Thank God the 5th one escaped, but like he could have just let this, he could not, it's not his fault in total. But yeah, if that one guy hadn't escaped later on, there could have been 10 deaths or 20
exactly.
deaths.
Exactly. Yeah, so true. And so the fact that this guy, this priest knew and didn't do anything. And weirdly, of course, I think it's wrong that he didn't tell the authorities, but at the same time, it's because his church told him that he will basically lose everything that he's worked for and his entire livelihood and his life, what he's devoted his life to, if he goes and tells the authorities.
It's quite a system they've built themselves.
Yeah. And of course, there are some people writing in who said, actually, I'm so glad to know that this sacred oath is still intact. Yay! Oh. And it's just so messed up. And
also, what was that guy? Sorry, what was that guy doing? Like, what was the priest up to when he kept reading the news and finding out people were dying the exact same way? Like, he wasn't thinking like, this doesn't feel like God's work anymore. Keeping a secret.
I can't imagine what kind of justification you'd have to go through, or just the, like you mentioned earlier, the mental gymnastics to try to justify not saving more lives.
It feels very anti-pro-life, if you're asking me.
Oh, interesting. And there's actually a recent case, 2014 in Louisiana, because I was curious about this, if that were still the case. And sure enough, the Catholic Church still, if you, no matter what it is, if you even treat someone differently because they confess something to you, if you even tell someone that person confessed something, even if you're vague or don't say what it is, you can be excommunicated. And in 2014, there was a sexual abuse case where the priest was in this position where either he testify and be excommunicated, or he not testify and be put in jail for contempt of court. But then the court ended up ruling that a priest has no duty to report confidential information heard during a sacramental confession. So even in 2014, the court said, you know what, actually, like, you're good, priest. You don't have to tell us anything. So
it's times like those where I feel like we're in 2021. Things, you know, things are so different than they used to be. And then it's like,
Yeah. You know. Exactly. Really. That's why I looked it up, because I thought, oh, people are going to listen to this and think and tell me or something, DM me and say, well, actually, nowadays, but sure enough, they're still doing it. I don't know. That's just wild.
It's bananas.
So then some of the letters were about his childhood and growing up. And I think one of the most poignant letters, I have the actual full thing written out here, was from just a man who wrote in about his childhood and was somewhat trying to relate his past to Jürgen's past. So he said this: I'm able to recall very clearly that when I was the same age, starting at the age of 15, these hideous, sadistic fantasies started, which I thought of every night in my imagination and then printed on paper. Who knows whether these fantasies would have remained imaginary if I had not had a safe and sound family full of love. Going through puberty, these fantasies totally stopped, and now I am not a habitual criminal, but a respected middle-class academic through and through. I am convinced that the criminal acts of Bartsch are the result of a coinciding of many unfortunate circumstances which allowed him to act on his sadistic urges, which are more or less a side effect of the sexual development of any human being, or any male human being, but which can be overcome with care and security, and which will go away all on its own. So it was like this argument at the time of like nature versus nurture, where like was he born this way and no matter what he would have. But then obviously people like this are like, well, his past didn't help him. His situation that he was in didn't help him. So, it's just very...
I feel like anytime nurture versus nature gets brought up, you can always lean on, well, like, oh, well, I wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of argument. I could talk about nature versus nurture forever. It's so fun. But I do notice the trend. They're the common thread.
Yeah. And people in this case specifically talked about his work as a butcher, because there was a mother who wrote in and said, this is awful that he had to work for his family in this butcher shop, which many people wrote
totally
in to say,
primed him into this. Or,
like maybe taught him skills there that he ended up using. And then
he got really comfortable around blood and
and said that must have had a very big psychological impact on him.
Also, if he's doing magic, he's used to throw that together. You got a blood sacrifice.
There you go. It's all combined.
Obviously.
And so, yeah. So then there's one person who said, for the sake of justice, you should put a class of students between the ages of 6 and 14 and train them as butchers, and then to see how they react and their sensitivity levels to different things. And so they wanted to conduct these experiments when, I don't know, I feel like you can just say, hey, yeah, that has potential to mess someone up. Not every time, maybe, but yeah, that has, I could see how that could mess you up.
It's an expensive study when you kind of already could just find the point, you know?
And it's like, okay, we've got one really fucked up childhood. Let's make a handful more. Why not? Right. Just for the sake of science, you know? But yeah, so this case showed a major like psychological shift in Germany, and it showed how the changes are to like the way people viewed serial killers, the justice system, and then it ended up the justice system has been geared more towards rehabilitation rather than punishment, and people credit this case as one of the causes for that, where this is where the whole attitude about punishment or rehabilitation, where it shifted in Germany.
So and, interesting.
Yeah, because sure enough, after the second trial, he was, instead of being sentenced to multiple life sentences, he was sentenced to 10 years of juvenile detention and then placed in psychiatric care.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, major change. So they, because wow, they thought
complete
that.
Complete 180. Mm-hmm,
because they thought, after all these expert testimonies, they thought, you know what? Maybe there is actually a chance for rehabilitation.
Wow.
Yeah, and the story doesn't quite end there. While he was in psychiatric care, he started to receive plenty of love letters, which I'm sure you've heard about plenty of times on the show, of people writing into serial killers.
It's like the Ted Bundy effect or whatever.
Yeah, expressing their love. And he actually married one of the women while he was in psychiatric care.
Oh, no.
Gisela Dyke, I think is her name. Yeah.
Gisela.
And that was in 1974. And so then while he was there, there was another letter. This letter was about, again, a person writing in about their own experience. This was someone who had been convicted of sexual abuse. They withheld their name to protect their family. But what they said was that the only way to help him would be castration, because the person writing in went through castration himself. And he said, quote, "I am a happy human being, live like all the others, and participate in the economic rise." So he basically put this idea out there that castration would be the only option for him to actually be, to reintegrate into society, to stop any urges that he has.
Wow. It was like one of those things where it was like next in my queue or something. And I wasn't really paying attention. And eventually I watched it. I looked up at the TV and I was like, what the fuck am I watching? It was like a whole documentary about castration and like the controversy behind it. And I still don't necessarily, my opinion does not matter on that. But I remember watching it being like, I've never thought this much about castration.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. I it's just very interesting. If you ever need a watch, it was definitely kept my attention once I knew what was going on. So
I honestly have become more interested in it after reading about this case. Because, yeah, I did not know anything about it.
I still don't know that much.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing to think of as a medical solution.
It was odd. It was a really well done documentary, though, in terms of I feel like I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I feel like something like that just kind of keeps your interest. So I was like, fun, educational. Yeah. But anyway, if you get bored tonight, go watch a castration documentary.
I weirdly might. So in 1976, he said, okay, I want to do this. So he asked that he be medically castrated. And this was not something that they often allowed people to do. So they actually were normally not for this as a solution at the time. But the hospital said, okay, we'll do it. And then on April 28th, 1976, during the surgery, a mistake was made and Bartsch died of halothane overdose.
Oh my gosh. And, wow, I did not see it going that way. Okay.
Yep. And the doctor had also killed other patients the same way and ended up being suspended for 9 months for the mistakes. They ruled it as
for
a mistake.
For 9 months and a bunch of deaths?
Yeah. Doing killing multiple people with the same mistake gets you 9 months suspension.
wow.
Yeah. But yeah, so basically to sum it up, this was the first case in Germany that includes psychosocial factors in the ruling.
Wow, that's
and
so cool.
Now
I mean,
it's more focused
way.
On rehabilitation instead of punishment, like the court system.
Wow. Yeah. What a wide gamut of stories we told today. Because we started with bunnies,
mm-hmm,
and we ended at castration.
Yeah.
And in between was a lot of other horrible stuff.
Yeah, I do have a fun fact. Okay, fun is not the right word. This is
a sad
just
fact.
A little thing that I couldn't like throw in, I think, but I found a little bit let's just say telling. You'll see. So okay. At one point while he was in prison, I read the letter. He wrote a letter to the police saying how much respect he has for them and what they do. And if he hadn't ended up as a killer in prison, he could see himself as a police officer.
Oh, I'm okay.
Which
yeah,
is not well, the least surprising thing ever.
Yeah, I know. I actually, it's so weird. I have a fun fact for you next week.
Oh,
and it's a real good one, I think. It's,
oh, good.
I did not see it coming. As in terms of the Bunnyman Bridge, I never heard of this. And I have, let's just say I have some homework because I'm not going to just tell you the fun fact. I got to give you a personal account of it.
Okay. So homework for me to do?
No, I'm going to do it for you. I'll let you know how it goes.
My homework is castration video.
Yes, 1,000%. It's graded, too.
I shouldn't call it castration video. Castration documentary.
It was definitely an educational film. Speaking of educational films, here's another thing that you should watch if you really want to get into the educational spirit. I went through this phase a while ago, and then it died down, and it always comes back eventually. But on YouTube, if you ever go and watch the old 1950s, 1960s PSAs about, like, how to be a popular kid and homosexuality and, like, dating do's and don'ts, they're disgustingly funny now
in
today's world. But it's, like, there's a two-parter PSA about the homosexual and how you, really need to watch out because they're coming for you. So,
oh, no.
Anyway.
What if it convinces me of something?
Then you know what? It was meant to be.
There was something wrong with me to begin with.
I think if that's the way it's going to show itself to you, that's the problem. That's where we need to have a conversation.
Oh, no.
But if you need like a palate cleanser after your castration documentary, you can go ahead and watch everything about the homosexual of 1960s.
That sounds amazing for maybe the wrong reasons, depending on... I can't imagine they're saying anything that I'll agree with. But
the best part because everyone can circle together and just watch how wrong it is and just cringe together. It's
perfect.
Very delightful.
Perfect. Yeah. I love it.
Well, thank you, Zandy. I'm so happy you're here. And first episode in the books, how are you feeling? Less nervous?
Less nervous. I feel good. I feel really good. It was lots of fun. I knew it was going to be fun. That was not the part I was worried about. But I feel good. I'll feel good until all the comments come in about it and how terrible it
so
was.
So everyone's you talked about castration a lot. Like, we really need to simmer down.
My next topic is just castration. That's it.
I was going to say, it sounds like it could be a two-parter to that doctor who was just hurting everyone during the castrations. Where can people find you? Because you've got your own podcasts.
Yeah, I do. So my podcasts are Beach Too Sandy, Water Too Wet. You might know my co-host. And then
the
Hercene Shifter. And then my other show is Human Seeking Human. And I host that with my co-host Liz. And we read things from old newspapers to look at the ways people made connections. We look about personal ads mainly is our focus. But and it actually helped a lot for my next topic because I went in a deep newspaper rabbit hole, because that's what we just read in newspapers. So I went in this deep newspaper rabbit hole for my next topic. So I'm very excited about that. So then you can find me personally. I stream on Twitch. I'm on Twitter, not much. Instagram, TikTok, everything at Zandy Schieffer, XandyScheiffer. If you don't know how to spell Schieffer by now, that's how you do it. But yeah, so this was amazing though. This was lots of fun. I'm so excited for more.
Very happy you're here. I'll have to either go check out RuneScape or we'll teach each other a fun fact about each other's interests by next week, I guess.
Perfect.
That
okay,
we can
that's,
feel
that's
like
fun
we've
homework.
Bonded even more. Yeah.
Because 5 minutes after we hang up, I'm going to be on playing again. So.
Okay, cool. Well, everyone go, I guess, watch you play that on Twitch.
That, I'm on like 24/7. I don't stream it because it's just like very boring, grindy stuff. And I have to focus a lot of time. But yes, I stream fun things on Twitch.
And, And you'll come back next week, and then you're here for another few episodes. So everyone, hope you're having fun, because this is what you get.
Yeah, and if not, just skip ahead a month if you're just catching up here. You know, if you're don't do that. That's
there
not.
There could be another guest, or you could go back to like Christine.
At least listen to Em's part. You know, like. I just realized I'm telling people to skip your podcast. Like, I do that on my podcast all the time, but I'm like, oh, no, that's not okay.
Christine and I are aware. So at least skip the second half. We see people all the time saying, like, who their favorites are. There's a lot of people who skip my part for true crime, but then there's other people who are only here for paranormal. It's a real mixed bag. I'm sure people just hear our voices and just go, never mind, you know? So, anyway, yes, you can find Zanny pretty much everywhere on the internet. And OnlyFans? No?
A fan and like a Twitch viewer actually created an OnlyFans for me.
That worked out better than I was expecting it to. Okay,
yeah,
well,
it actually exists. So you can. I don't know if it actually exists anymore though. It was a whole fake OnlyFans page. It was amazing. But
and you can also find me and Zandy as Sims. I don't know if you knew that, but people have built families and we are Sims in like the gallery, whatever it's called, where everyone can share the access.
Oh, I'm in the gallery. I didn't
know
that.
You're in there, I think. So anyway, everyone go check out our Sims. And
it's the only place you should find me. Forget everything else. Just go get my sim.
And usually we end where we say, and that's why we drink. I say the first word, then you say the next word. You ready? And
yes, that's
why
we
drink.
Do we both say drink?
Sure. Let's say it. 1, 2, 3.
Drink.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's Easy Opening Smooth Pouring Container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money.